Hey, scaredy cats. In October of 1973, author Lois Duncan released a young adult thriller novel. She was inspired to write it when she was making dinner and overheard her daughter and a friend having a conversation about a boy. One of the girls had a crush on a boy. The other was talking about what she was going to wear on a date that she was looking forward to. The twist? Both girls were talking about the same boy. Duncan began to wonder, what would happen if the boy had deliberately implanted himself in the lives of two girls he knew were friends, and if he built up a different personality to present to each of them? She later read a story about a hit-and-run accident in the newspaper. These events formed the basis of the novel I Know What You Did Last Summer. More than 20 years later, Kevin Williamson, riding high on his Scream success, would sell his script for a movie very, very loosely based on Duncan's novel. It was the late 90s after all, and teen horror was everything. So get out your tiaras and your crop tops, watch out for rain slickers and bad hair. It's time to talk about I Know What You Did Last Summer.
So the boy and girl are making out, right? When they hear over the radio that this lunatic killer's escaped from an insane asylum.
That's not the way it goes. The boy goes for help and the girl stays in the car and she hears this, like, scratching sound.
No, he's been decapitated.
No, he was gutted with a hook.
Miss Prelaw, what's the charge for manslaughter? We make a pact. Right here and now we take this to our grave.
For the last year, four friends have kept a secret.
Are you on drugs?
No.
Well, then what is wrong? I've had a rough year.
But not all secrets stay buried.
Somebody sent this to me.
Oh my God.
Someone knows.
I know what you did last summer. Ooh.
What they thought would be a new beginning.
Toast to us.
Is becoming a dead end.
Somebody tried to kill you last night. We have to go to the police.
If you want to be dead, he could have done it.
And the mistake they made.
It was an accident.
There was no accident. It was murder.
What if he's still alive? Hey!
What are you doing here?
Is coming back to haunt them.
Oh my gosh.
He's after me too.
I got a letter.
I got run over. Helen gets her hair chopped off. Ah! Julie gets a body in a trunk, and you get a letter? That's balanced.
He's waiting for us to unravel.
The wait is over.
What are you waiting for, huh? What are you waiting for?
I'm your host, Sherry, and this is just your friendly reminder that, as always, we will be breaking down the plot in great detail, which means there will be loads of spoilers. So if you haven't seen the movie, go watch it. Otherwise, proceed at your own risk. Joining us to talk about this 90s slasher classic are the Real Housewives of Saskatoon, Crystal and Michelle.
Hi.
Hello.
We're back again. Well, thanks for having us again. I was surprised and happy that you asked me back.
You're like the Heather Dubrow of, like, my podcast.
Oh my gosh, Heather Dubrow. Oh, that's amazing.
Too bad you're drinking Pilsner instead of Champs.
Yeah, I should be having that Champy.
Why don't you take a second to introduce yourselves?
Well, I'm Michelle. Yeah, I live in Saskatoon. I love horror movies. Crystal and I do a podcast called The Real Housewives of Saskatoon, where we just recap different Housewives episodes. Right now, we are recapping New Jersey, as well as Ultimate Girls Trip. And yeah, we just have fun and shoot the shit, and it's good.
I'm Crystal. I same as Michelle, everything. I always hate this part. I feel so awkward talking about myself. Live in Saskatoon, born and raised with my husband and my dog. I wasn't raised with them, but I currently live with them. Oh my god, Sherry, you're gonna have to edit all of this. Oh, I'm so sorry.
I love it. It's great.
I haven't even finished my Bud Lights, and they're yeah, I don't know. I work for a trucking company in Saskatoon, and I love horror. I love reality trash. I love gossip. I love Sherry. I love Michelle. I love Sherry's podcast. And I love being so here sweet. With the two of you.
Wow. Thank you. Ditto, ditto. Do you remember the first time you saw I Know What You Did Last Summer?
Oh.
This one I did, and I never remember because I feel like I watched them so many times that I forget what the first time was like. Mm-hmm. But this one I actually saw in the theater, and I remember it because I remember leaving the theater being in love with Freddie Prinze Jr.
Mm. Oh my gosh.
Obsessed. Mm-hmm.
Apparently you weren't the only one because Sarah Michelle Gellar married him after this. So.
Yeah. I don't know 100% what he's been up to lately, but for a while he was a writer on WWE, like doing wrestling storylines. I don't think he's doing that anymore, but he was for a while, which I thought was very interesting.
And I feel like he was doing voice stuff for like Star Wars video games or cartoons or something. Like, he's a nerd boy and I love it.
Yeah, he just kind of like faded away from being in movies, but I don't know why. He has aged well, I will say. I was looking at photos of him.
He's aged really well. So is Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Yeah, they both look great.
Michelle, what about you? Do you remember the first time you saw it?
No, like, I know I didn't see it in the theater when it first came out. It probably wasn't until, like, probably later on in high school I probably saw it. So that would have been in the 2000s sometime. So I'm not sure.
I'm embarrassed to admit that I didn't see it until 2021.
Oh,
despite being really into horror movies when it came out, I was like, I hate Jennifer Love Hewitt, and this looks like a terrible Scream knockoff. Mm-hmm. That was my snobby self talking.
Well, you weren't wrong.
Yeah. And the thing about Jennifer Love Hewitt is she didn't have a lot of character range when we were growing up. Like, it was all kind of the same, like, mousy kind of like quiet
innocent girl
that like guys had a crush on, like, I don't know. Yeah, that's so I get true. It
The letterbox summary: as they celebrate their high school graduation, four friends are involved in a hit and run accident when their car hits and apparently kills a pedestrian on an isolated roadway. They dispose of the body and vow to keep the incident a secret. A year later, somebody starts sending them letters bearing the warning, I know what you did last summer. They don't even talk about their high school graduation. I know that clearly they just graduated from high school because they're talking about going to college, but that's not the big thing. The big thing is the pageant.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and it was weird because, I don't know, when Crystal and I were watching, I clearly hadn't seen it in a long time, but how they do kind of like, okay, they're done school, now they're on to college. I was like watching it, and then I was like, aren't they still in high school? And Crystal's like, no, it's like a flash forward to the next summer because I know what you did last summer. And I'm like, oh yeah, that's the whole thing about the movie. You are correct. But
So the screenplay, as already mentioned, was by Kevin Williamson, and he based it on the novel by Lois Duncan of the same name. Now, she was actually really opposed to this being turned into a slasher film, saying she was actually appalled in one interview.
Oh.
Yeah, I was reading something about that. She had a child that had died in, like, I guess was, like, very anti-gore and horror and murder.
Oh. Which
is fair, I guess. I don't know the whole particulars, but.
Yeah, she said her daughter was murdered by an unknown assailant in 1989.
To be honest, I didn't actually have any idea that he kind of loosely based it on that. Yeah, that would, I guess I could see why that would be tough, but at the same time, he wasn't, I don't know, it was his new, like, reimagination of it, right? So
exactly. In fact, I think in the book, no one dies.
Right.
Like, the only person who dies is the pedestrian.
Yeah. Right. So, yeah, not the same thing.
Have either of you read the book?
No.
Oh.
I feel like I have, like, way back, you know, in the days before technology. I don't know.
Can't, when you couldn't keep track of what books you read.
Exactly. I wonder if it's any good. I've never read it. But if you don't remember reading it, maybe it's not that great.
That's true. But I've sometimes read a book and like then I pick up, I'm like, oh, I got this new book, and I start reading it, and I'm about 30 pages in, and I'm like, I've read this before.
Oh!
And I liked it, so I just...
Honestly, that happened to us watching a movie the other day, me and my husband. Oh, what movie was it? The Cloverfield... The Clove Hitch Killer. Oh. Like, Miles was like, we watched this before. And I'm like, we absolutely have not watched this before. And then it's, like, going on. And the same thing. We're probably, like, 20 minutes in. And I was like, this scene reminds me of a different movie we watched. And he's like, it's not a different movie. It is this movie. And then I was like, oh, no, you're right. We did see this. Like, and that's why now I like Letterboxd, because then I can keep track of, like, what I've watched, yes, and kind of remember. But, oh, my God.
I get that all exactly. the time. Scott will be like, we already watched this. I'm like, no, we didn't. And he's like, yeah, we did, but you slept through the whole thing. And I'm like, oh,
or
yeah.
That.
Probably.
Or that.
So Kevin Williamson wrote this before he actually wrote Scream, but wasn't able to sell it. And so once Scream was a big success, Columbia Pictures immediately bought it. Director Jamie Blanks originally put together a trailer as an audition to direct, but it came in a week too late and he didn't get the job. However, one of the producers remembered him and later hired him to direct Urban Legend.
That's one I need to rewatch too.
It's so fun. It was directed by Jim Gillespie. We had Jennifer Love Hewitt, Sarah Michelle Gellar, Freddie Prinze Jr., and Ryan Phillippe in the lead roles, with Johnny Galecki in a supporting role.
Love him.
So Sarah Michelle Gellar and Jennifer Love Hewitt originally auditioned for their opposite parts.
I can't picture like Jennifer Love Hewitt in the character that, like in Helen's character, I guess, at all.
Mm-mm. No, I could see Sarah Michelle Gellar doing Julie, but I can't see Jennifer Love Hewitt doing Helen.
Maybe that was her way of trying to break out from being, like, typecasted from that, like, quiet, innocent girl.
Maybe. Melissa Joan Hart, also of original Sabrina the Teenage Witch fame, was considered for the role of Julie James, but she actually turned it down because, similarly to me, she thought it was another ripoff of Scream.
Oh, interesting.
And Reese Witherspoon auditioned but changed her mind and was like, not for me. But she did recommend her then boyfriend Ryan Phillippe for the role of Barry.
Wow. I don't think I knew that they were already dating at that point.
Yeah, I don't know when they started dating. I feel like it was before they became famous-ish.
Yeah,
well, she's been famous since she was like a preteen, and then I think they met at her birthday party, but I don't know. Why do I remember this? But I don't know how he was there, because I don't think he was big yet. Cool story.
You love the gossip.
Yeah.
That's why you remember.
Oh, my God.
We were talking today about, like, I don't know if you were into SNL at all, but Will Forte had recently guest hosted. So I don't. Yeah, Will Forte had that whole, like, MacGruber, like, character that he did, that he came up with a movie
right.
for.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Ryan Phillippe and Kristen Wiig were, like, his sidekicks in
yes.
it. And so he hosted recently and was doing, like, MacGruber skits with them in it. And I was like, oh, my God, this is amazing. But I haven't watched the TV show yet.
How does that theme song go? Making life-saving devices out of household materials, MacGruber.
How do you remember that?
I don't know.
Yes, that's exactly what it was.
Oh my God.
But yeah, I would suggest watching the skits. They were funny.
Oh, okay, here we go. Well, no, this doesn't make sense. Okay, that fact is wrong because I just looked it up. And Reese Witherspoon and Ryan Phillippe met on Witherspoon's 21st birthday in March of 1997. This film started shooting on March 31st. So I highly doubt
that she was the one.
Yeah. How dare you, IMDb.
Yeah.
Lie to me.
IMDb should be fact-checking things.
No kidding.
So, the film was shot in 50 days, starting on March 31st, 1997. And a good portion of the shoot took place at night, because there's a lot of night scenes, which Jim Gillespie, the director, said was difficult for the cast and crew. It also caused a bit of issues in the small town locations where they shot. So the beginning of the movie, when you know you see the coastal scenes with the winding roads on the edge of the cliff, that was actually shot in Sonoma County, California, as a stand-in for North Carolina, because apparently North Carolina doesn't have roads like that. They're just very, very flat.
Oh.
Can relate in Saskatchewan.
We got hills every now and then, but that's about it.
The remaining scenes were shot in Southport, North Carolina. The movie was released on October 17th, 1997. It had a budget of $17 million and made $125.3 million.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's wild. He really tapped into a good market there.
Yes. So when you look at reviews, Richard Harrington cited I Know What You Did Last Summer as, hold on to your pants, superior to Scream.
Whoa. Ooh. Shots fired.
Right? He described it as a smart and sharply... sharply drawn genre film with a moral center and with a solid cast of young actors to hold it. Derek Ellie of Variety also liked the movie, calling the film a polished genre piece with superior fright elements that should perform at better than average theatrical levels.
Polished.
Oh, wow.
Roger Ebert, not a fan of the movie, and rated it 1 out of 4 stars. He said, the best shot in this film is the first one, not a good sign.
Oh, yeah. I mean, not surprising coming from him, I guess. But, mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think it's, like, a masterpiece, but it's pretty good.
Polished?
Yeah, I would not say it's polished, I guess, but it's still pretty good.
That opening scene is very Lost Boys.
Yes! I thought so, too.
Yeah, I like that.
It starts the way a lot of movies in the 90s did. And you get this thick guitar riff, and we are hearing a cover of Summer Breeze by Type O Negative.
Oh, dear. Oh, boy.
It's such a bad cover.
Not good.
Yeah, I did not like it.
Didn't we talk about a bad cover in the faculty episode?
Yeah, we sure did.
The class of 99's brick in the wall.
That's right. So we travel over this beautiful coastal landscape bordered by curvy roads and craggy cliffs. We're going over the water, which, like you said, Crystal, very reminiscent of The Lost Boys. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if they're like, let's steal that.
Yeah.
We zoom in on this character who is sitting at the edge of the cliff. He's drinking. He's mournfully looking at some type of charm. And as often happens in horror movies, he's alerted to something behind him. But when he turns around, there's nothing there. So get back to your drinking. And he does, as fireworks start exploding in the sky. So we move on to the 4th of July festivities happening in the small town of Croker. In addition to the fireworks, there's a parade. There's a beauty pageant. So we have an all-Canadian panel. And we obviously don't celebrate the 4th of July here in Canada, but we do have Canada Day on July 1st. I've never seen, and I've only lived in 2 cities, I've never seen anything like these 4th of July festivities anywhere to celebrate Canada Day.
No. And this is like presumably a small town where they know absolutely everyone, and they go... all the F out. Like, several marching bands? Who has more than one marching band?
I was also saying to Crystal, like, why do they have to make marching bands look so nerdy in high school, like, with their uniforms? Don't get me wrong, the uniforms are cool, but, like, I just can't believe, like, picture being in high school wearing those uniforms, being a marching band, and not being made fun of. Like, why can't they just wear street clothes?
Exactly. Like, you're already a band geek. And I was a band geek, so I say that with love. You're already a band geek. Why make them wear those uniforms that center them out even more?
Exactly.
At least update the hats. I mean, that's the issue I really have.
I think I agree with you. Like, I could probably get behind the jackets.
The jackets are cool.
But those hats... Those hats just put a target on them, I think.
Really? But... what do they call those epaulets on the shoulders? Like, that's very cool. I'm into those jackets. It's the hats for me that need to go.
And, like, maybe some less formal pants. Like, if you pair that jacket with a cute little skirt.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It also looks so hot. They're in the middle of, like, the beginning of July. And they're wearing, like, this.
Exactly. Forget about it.
Exactly. So what in Saskatoon, what's the big thing to do on Canada Day?
We do have fireworks, but that's really about it. Like, really, like, we have. Yeah, we have a hill that they, like, shoot some fireworks off of. Sometimes during the day there might be, like, a band or something playing where they'll have, like,
food trucks. And
yeah, that's really about it. We don't get, like, no crazy parade or, like,
currently no beauty pageant.
No beauty pageant. I don't know. It's not that. Maybe we're just not as patriotic as everybody in the United States seems to be. I don't know.
There's something to be said for these small towns, though, because in the faculty they have these big football games on Friday nights. And, like, there's just not a lot to do in these small towns. So they got to come up with something that they can do.
That's true. They need to make their own fun at certain times. Yeah, I could see that.
Are there actually two parades? Because there's the parade in the day that we see in the second. And then there's a second parade at night.
I'm like, how long is this parade route? Like, do they circle back? How long are they walking? Because it's like from morning to night.
Your feet would hurt so much being in that parade at that point.
The longest parade of all time.
And if you were in the band, you'd be so winded. Like, I don't know, but it seems like it takes a lot of organization to do two parades in one day. I don't know.
Yeah, like, hats off to this 4th of July planning committee, because they've got it dialed in.
Mm-hmm.
So at the beauty pageant, we see the six finalists. They are brought on stage, and it looks like the whole town has turned out for this, including Ray, Barry, and Julie, who are friends with one of the finalists, Helen. Julie does not appreciate their commentary, however, on Helen's ample bosom, which just sounds, I just like saying ample bosom. Just as the MC asks Helen, what will be your contribution to your community and the world at large? And Helen, who has been fed the line by Julie, says she wants to serve her country through her art. They eat it up, and this, of course, wins her the title of Miss Croaker or Croaker Queen. I think Croaker Queen should be the title of it. So it is time to celebrate. So Sarah Michelle Gellar is Helen, and she is my favorite part about this movie.
Oh, love her. She deserved so much better.
She did.
I loved her too.
She's gorgeous, she's funny, and as we know, she has hurricane proof hair.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't know, Kristen and I were talking about, like, kudos to any women that have confidence to do, like, a pageant. But I could never just, like, parade around in my bathing suit in front of people when I'm not in a pool.
Yeah, like, not even at the beach am I walking around.
Yeah, same, honestly.
So good for you, Kroger.
Yeah. Yeah. It takes a lot of, like, guts to do that, you're right. And then, like, to answer, like, a serious, well, semi-serious question. Like, here I am in my bathing suit with my tiara on. Does she have a no, she doesn't have a tiara on it. Not until she hasn't won yet. It's true. The one thing she doesn't have, however, is a good relationship with her sister Elsa, who's played by Bridget Nielsen, as we see at the party where they exchange some sisterly snark.
Is little Miss Croaker getting sauteed tonight?
Yeah. Yeah, it's not a friendly.
It's like full hatred.
Yeah.
Elsa is mean as hell. And then also I had to watch Billy Madison this morning because she's Veronica Vaughn. That Veronica Vaughn is one piece of ace.
One piece of ace.
I know from experience.
Yeah. Oh, man, now I need to watch Billy Madison. So good.
I love that watching this made you watch Billy Madison. That's awesome. We also meet Max, who has a bit of a thing for Julie, and he's like, oh, come on, let me take you out before you leave town. But she politely turns him down, even, like, looking to Helen for assistance. But Helen's like, this is all you, my friend. Barry interrupts, and he toasts to their last summer of teenage decadence. He is definitely the rich, entitled hothead of the group.
What a dick.
Mm-hmm. And he's a bit of a bully, too. Like, he pushes Max around before Ray finally steps in.
Poor Max, sweet baby angel. Yeah.
All he wanted to do was give this underage girl a drink.
Also, like, were you guys Kids in the Hall fans?
Yes.
Whenever I think of the name Helen, I can't not think of 30 Helens Agree. Like, and do you think that name is ever coming back, Helen? Like, I can't picture a baby with the name Helen anymore.
No. Helen and Barry.
Barry! That's my dad's name. So I have a soft spot for it. But that's, I'm like, fair, nobody since, like, my dad, who's going to be 70 this year, so nobody since 1952 is named their child Barry. Actually, that's not true. Who's that guy? Oh my god, he was on Seventh Heaven.
Oh, Barry Watson.
Barry Watson.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
So not since Barry Watson has anybody named their child Barry. So this party is tired. It is time for the two couples, Barry and Helen, and Julie and Ray, to head to Dawson's Beach.
Oh man, as soon as I said that, I was like, Dawson's Beach? Dawson's Creek? And Crystal was like, okay, Michelle, yeah, you get it. I know. I know, you were like, oh! Just because you're the most supportive friend, no matter what I say or do.
It's the best kind of friend to have.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So Ray is telling an urban legend as they're sitting on the beach around their little fire. And of course, everyone has their own version of the story. So this is actually known as the boyfriend's death story. And all four of their versions are actually versions that exist in the universe. The initial one is the hook in the car door, which doesn't feature the death of either the boyfriend or the girlfriend in the original urban legend. Julie is living her best feminist life, being like, it is an urban legend created to warn young women of the dangers of premarital sex, when she is literally, well, actually honeyed by her boyfriend.
Yeah. Did either of you guys ever, like, I wouldn't do this with my friends, but anytime I'd go to my cousin's farm and we would, like, all kind of sleep together in the same area, they would always try to tell, like, scary stories. The only one I ever remember was one about them, like, this same kind of scenario where this girl and her friends are having a sleepover and they thought they heard somebody, but then she, like, put her arm out and her dog was there licking her hand, so she thought it wasn't. Did you guys hear this one, too?
I hate that one so much.
Oh, my God. I can't believe that was, like, a thing that people knew about worldwide. But oh man, that's all, like, one of the best things I remember about having sleepovers at my cousin's place is doing that. But
the version that I heard was a little different. It wasn't like a slumber party. It was just a girl who was like, always, like, her parents worked late, and so she was always scared at night when she would go to sleep, but her dog was always there, so she'd put her hand down and her dog would give her a kiss and, like, she'd be comforted. Mm-hmm. And that's the version that I heard. But yeah, same thing. Ooh, it's so terrible.
Yeah, I don't like it.
No. So the couples split up and they are discussing their futures once they leave town. So Barry and Julie are going to live a celeb life. Julie's going to be on a soap opera. She's very ambitious. And Barry's going to play in the NFL. They're going to move to Europe, have babies. It's a whole thing. Ray and Julie are a little more serious. And Ray's like, you should come to New York with me because you get me. And she's like, yeah, I understand your pain. It's so 90s to me.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's so, I'm gonna go home and listen to the Crow soundtrack.
And I loved that Helen was like, I'm gonna star on Guiding Light, but she actually was on a soap opera.
Yeah, that's right. Was she on, was it Another World? I don't know. I feel like it was Another World.
I think it was All My Children.
Oh yeah, I think you're right.
The only soap opera I ever watched was Passions. Anybody watch that one?
Is that with Timmy?
Yes.
Yes, Timmy and the witch and Oh my lord. Good stuff.
I never watched it, but Jer did.
Oh really? Oh man. I would tape it like on like VCR, like tape, whatever. What do you even call those VHS? Nowadays? Just a tape, a VHS. Yes, a VHS. And I would come home from school and I'd watch it.
Oh my god. Offer to make Jer a cocktail and ask him if he wants a Martimmy.
Yeah.
Julie, however, is worried about the hot alternative girl he's going to meet in the coffee shops in New York City. So what better way to quell their fears and not talk about their relationship than to have sex on the beach?
I'm not interested in ever having sex on the beach. The thought of sand all over me does not interest me at all.
I just feel like the beach gets so cold at night.
That too.
Yeah.
Then you put your clothes back on and you're all sandy.
It's very, very true. Barry is too drunk to drive them all home, so Ray acts as the designated driver, and they head back to town. Barry, true to form, is getting really riled up, and he continues to drink as he stands up through the sunroof. And all of a sudden, he screams at them to look out, but it's too late, and they hit something. Pulling over, they're all freaking out, but they're like, it was just a deer, it was a dog, blah, 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 until Julie sees a boot at the side of the road, and they realize that they have hit a person.
Blood-curdling scream.
Yeah, she was good at that scream, I will say that. That was award-winning.
She's got a set of lungs on her for sure. Sure enough, there is a body on the shoulder of the road, and Ray crouches next to it to confirm that the guy's dead. Because, yes, clearly you're a doctor, Ray, and can pronounce people dead.
Yeah, Ray, you saw yeah.
And, yeah, and he just... Now I'm just picturing him being like, pronounced dead, I'm calling it. Oh, I don't even know. I can't remember military time, but.
Gosh, that would be amazing. Julie wants to call an ambulance, but Barry's like, use your brain. And she's like, it was an accident. However, Barry and Ray are convinced that things will not work out well for them. Ray says we're going to fry, but here's the thing. Barry's a rich white guy in this small town.
Yeah.
That's what we said. We said the same thing. And not only that, but like them being like, oh, well, there was like alcohol over the car. There's such a thing as like a breathalyzer that they could find out that the driver was not drinking.
Yeah. Although I think, doesn't Ray say they'll never believe that I was driving?
Yeah, why wouldn't they? You have three witnesses who will corroborate.
So instead, they're like, oh, well, let's clean up. We'll move on. That'll work out fine. What could possibly go wrong? So their plan is to clean up the car and dump the body in the ocean. The only one who resists is Julie, but Ray's like, I don't have the advantages the rest of you do. This will essentially ruin my life. And then Barry's like, think about your future, Julie.
Also, I need to note, Sarah Michelle Gellar just like wearing her tiara the whole time.
Yes!
The whole time. Like, and like, honestly, the way that they disposed of the body, I remembered that differently than what actually happens for whatever reason. I thought that they just took it and just like threw it off the cliff into the water.
Yeah, why don't
so
they?
I was like, I really don't know.
So many whys in this movie.
Because here's the thing. So let's say that, so if they had just rolled it off the cliff, like right where they were, fine. Instead, they put it in the vehicle. So they get DNA all over their car. Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The chances of them getting pulled over now, because there's got to be some kind of crunch to the car. Like.
I know. It just, I don't know. In that state of panic, I don't know that would be in my capacity to be like, let's dispose of this and take it elsewhere. I don't know.
This is the perfect time for Max to show up on the scene, but Julie convinces him that they just had a little accident, which is bolstered when he sees Barry leaning over the guardrail, pretending to throw up while Helen rubs his back. They're pretty put together to be able to like, put this in action.
For being as hammered as they were.
Oh, well. Nothing sobers you up like killing a man.
Oh my gosh, that could come out of like some grizzled old man in like a, you know, some action movie. Nothing sobers you up. I can't even say
That was perfect.
That was so good. Crystal, you're always like so witty with the sound bites. I love it.
Yes.
Well, thanks.
You're welcome. Max acts all morally superior, but he is just downright douchey to Ray. Once he drives away, the couple are free to continue with their plan. So they drive the body back to this deserted dock. Barry says, maybe we'll get lucky and a shark will eat him. The absolute callousness of these teenagers.
I agree. I don't know. Like, and I like how, yeah, like nobody else says anything. Like, I could see Barry doing that and like not caring. Mm-hmm. But the rest of them seem like they have a conscience. So like, why would this seem like the best idea? I don't know. Not a lot of thought process.
Ray does start having second thoughts. So Helen's like, fuck this. I'll do it. So as she starts to push him, he wakes up and grabs Helen's crown, which my note here, Michelle, is how is she still wearing it after all this time?
Seriously.
Before he tumbles into the water. Well, they can't have that. So Barry dives in after him. He retrieves the crown as the victim drowns.
But the man is alive. Why didn't you retrieve the man? Why? You're not a murderer.
Yeah, you could have got out of it. You could have just been like, I forget what I said their reasoning could be on why they were on a dock, but like his eyes open up. Like, why not just save him at that point? Yeah. I don't know.
Oh my God.
Yeah, exactly.
Instead, he like punches him in the face and wrestles the crown away. See you in hell, loser.
Barry insists that they never talk about this again, and they make a pact to take it to their grave. But Julie is still very hesitant, and Barry just loses it, and he grabs her by the neck until she says it. Which I have to say, like, why are her best friend and her boyfriend not coming to her rescue as this guy has her around, like, has his hand around her neck?
Right? Yeah, I'd be like, thanks for dropping me off at home. Immediately go to the police station. Yeah, Barry killed a guy.
Exactly, exactly.
And then he tried to choke me.
Yeah. Yeah. Fuck him.
As we leave the dock, we see that charm that the guy at the beginning was kind of playing with discarded on the ground. It's 1 year later. Julie is away at college, and time has not been kind to her. Her internal trauma is definitely showing on her exterior. But, of course, it's Jennifer Love Hewitt, so even with lank, greasy hair and dull skin, she's still lovely.
Mm-hmm. Michelle, this is next summer, so they know what they did.
I'm up to speed now. I'm up to speed now.
Sorry, I had to.
So it's time for her to go home for the summer for sun and fun, as her roommate reminds her. And I can't blame Julie for not wanting to go home. I feel like I wouldn't want to go back to the scene of that.
Yeah, back for what? All your friends are dicks.
Yeah.
And you're and just going to be haunted by memories of the... Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, also kill the man.
Mm-hmm. Mom is convinced that Julie is on drugs because she looks like death, but she's also seen a report card, which is not good. In the book, Julie's mom has ESP.
Oh. Really?
Oh, she does. She know?
I guess.
But she did last summer.
Oh my god! It's the mom all along in the book trying to teach her daughter a lesson.
Oh my god! I have to read this book.
Some mail came from Julie. It is succinct and to the point. It just says, "I know what you did last summer." So she spends a lot of time that night just staring at the note, which of course puts her on edge even more than she already was.
This is as long as the parade, because day to night, staring at this page with nothing on it. Like, I was like, is she looking for clues? Like, why is she?
She's analyzing the handwriting.
And then Crystal and I were saying we wouldn't even be that stealthy. Like, Crystal's would, she would make that, but there would be like chocolate smudged on it from like eating chocolate while writing it, or like mine would have coffee or beer spilt on it. Yeah, or something.
Really would immediately like, show up at our house.
Yeah.
Did you write this? No.
Yeah. As you still have chocolate on your hands.
I think it was your mom.
I think it was your mom. I'm trying to think what would be on mine. What would be on my note that would give it away? It would probably be cat hair and probably chocolate as well. No, cat hair and that sour candy sugar that's on top, like on every, like, that would be mine.
Right there. The other day, wasn't the other day, a couple weeks ago, me and my kid were sharing like a bag of Sour Patch Kids. And then when it was done, I wasn't really paying attention to the bag. And all of a sudden I look over and my child took the bag and was trying to shoot the sugar, just straight the rest of the sugar out of the bag. And I was like, this is not healthy or good. I guess it's kind of like a pixie stick. I guess, is there any difference there? But I was like, oh my God.
That is my kind of kid right there. Every single sound that she hears is ominous to her because, of course, she's now like worked herself up into this frenzy. So the next day, she heads to Shiver's department store where we see Elsa, Helen's sister, managing the store. So this is actually a real store called Harold's Department Store. It is in North Carolina. And as of 2019, it looks still very similar to the way it is in the movie and sells a mixture of clothing and home appliances.
I'm glad it's still open. Weird. That's nice to hear.
We learned that Helen's stint in New York didn't last very long, and she's now working the fragrance counter at the family store. So Julie goes up to her, she shows her the note, and Elsa is lingering in the background.
She wants to know what they did last summer, I guess.
Yeah. Well, in the book, she's also a suspect, apparently.
Oh.
She is mean as hell.
She really is. Now it is time to go see Barry. And despite Barry and Julie going to the same school, apparently they've never run into each other on campus. So this event has separated them all pretty well. He, however, is not too worried about the note, and he takes this opportunity to insult them, saying they look like shit run over twice. Maybe you should look in a mirror sometime.
God, he's such a dick.
So bad.
He's such a dick.
They were walking up, and he's like, what do you want? What did he say? I can't remember. But he was mean.
I couldn't wait for Barry to die. Like, I really, like,
yes.
You're like, he should be the first one to bite it. Barry is very easily provoked. He flies into a rage so easily. And I actually might not say steroids.
That's what we said. Oh,
for sure. Roid rage.
Yeah. So since the accident, Julie has found out who the victim was. It is a man named David Egan. His death has been ruled an accidental drowning. His body found 3 weeks after he died. Barry asks what Ray thinks, but like Helen and Barry, Ray and Julie have broken up, and she thinks he's working up north. Well, who could it be then? And they're like, who could have seen what happened? And Barry's like, well, Max was there. So he instantly becomes Barry's number one suspect, and they go to confront him. Barry asks to speak to him in private, but speaking isn't all that he has planned. He threatens him with a fish hook before walking away.
So frightening.
Yeah, like I could see, like, if the twist had been that it was like Barry all along.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Max is furious at Barry and his college quarterback ass, but he unfortunately is going to die mad about it.
Mm-hmm.
I still don't understand why the killer killed Max. Like, because he didn't want Max to take credit for it. Like,
no, because he needed his crabs, Crystal.
Oh, good point. Excellent point.
At the docks, they see Ray, who has been working as a fisherman for almost a year now. And Julie and Ray catch up as Julie tells him about the letter. And I feel like Ray's really set up as a red herring because they don't know that he's been working on the boats. He mentions a father that worked on boats, but Julie's like, I thought you didn't even know who your father was. Like, he seems to have all these secrets, so he is set up as a pretty good red herring, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's pretty shifty.
Yeah. Julie tells him that she doesn't want to know him, even though she doesn't blame him, before she walks away. So now...
doesn't she run away?
She does, doesn't she?
She runs away so much in this show.
I don't want to know you. And then runs down the dock by herself so awkwardly.
It also reminds me, of course, like reality TV shows taking space up in my
brain. Are you talking about Lauren Conrad? And then
yes, when she's like, I forgive you, but I want to forget you.
Also,
is that what she says?
Yes. And also, I kept thinking about when she was fighting with Heidi and being like, you know what you did.
Yeah.
Thinking about that too. That is so funny.
It is time for Max to take his final bow. He is boiling some crabs in the crab shack, and there is steam everywhere. We see a figure modeling the summer of 1997 fisherman look, complete with a big-ass hat, coming through that steam. Max notices too late and then ends up getting hooked under the chin with the fish hook that he had recently hung up, or I guess stabbed into some ice, and then he's dragged across the cooktop. Oof. But, you know, Barry's all on edge, so he has to take his aggression out somewhere, so he heads to the gym. He successfully beats up a punching bag before he heads to the showers, where he sees the shadow of a person walk quickly by. He's not super concerned, so he hits the locker room, where he notices a Polaroid sticking out from one of the lockers. It's a picture of his car with the words, "I know," written on it. So we know the culprit couldn't have gotten very far, because we hear somebody walking around the locker room just out of view. And he returns to his locker to find it wide open, his jacket missing, and the guy working at the gym insisting that no one is there.
We were talking about the Polaroid picture just because I was like, can you imagine being like a lab person, like developing photos like back in the day, and like the shit that you would see, like, oh my god, I wonder, like, were they, was it like lawyer privileges where it's like yeah, you can't say,
find an NDA before you start working in the photo lab.
Yeah.
Remember the ones that you could like walk by and they'd like be like processing the photos in the window so you could see them coming out?
Yes.
Like, god. What if somebody saw something scandalous? Exactly.
I'm sure they did, unless anybody that ever did anything scandalous just had their own like
dark room. Dirty dark room. Heading outside, we see a car squealing out of the parking lot in reverse, and Barry runs after it. The car stops at the end of the road. Barry thinks it's Max. And in the most on-the-nose statement of the movie, he says, "Max, you're fucking dead." So the car comes racing towards him, and Barry tries to outrun it before he reaches a dead end. Was there nowhere Barry could have, like, just jumped to this? Like, come on. It was a very wide road.
In a zigzag pattern. Like, there was no space between the building. Like, why are they just... He's not
exactly
obviously that bright, so...
That's true. The car stops, and all we can see of the driver, we see the shadow, and we can kind of see the outline of that hat. The car starts slowly. It knocks Barry into a pile of crates and boxes, and Barry lies wounded on the ground, screaming, "Help me," as the driver gets out and slowly approaches. Barry is begging and crying as the fisherman takes a hook out of his coat. And the way that shot of the fisherman is framed, it's a perfect shot, like where he's upside down because that's the way that Barry is viewing him.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a great shot.
That hat sells it.
Oh my god, that hat. I bet you never seen had a hat like that it. In 1997, don't you?
What was that like bear, that like cartoon bear that had like a rain
Paddington.
Hat on? Yeah, that's what I think about every time I see that guy in a hat. I don't know why. I just think of that hat and I think of Paddington Bear.
Okay.
Not a great comparison, I guess, of children's. Like,
did Paddington Bear ever attempt murder?
Yeah, just the picture of Paddington Bear with a hook.
Oh, fuck, that is scary.
Yeah, frightening.
Barry does survive and the others visit him in the hospital the next day. Julie, once again, wants to go to the police, and Ray agrees with her at this point. Barry reminds them of their pact and says he wants to find out who did this. "We can figure this out," Helen says. "We'll track down his family and friends." So it's time for the Scooby Gang to assemble, except that's the wrong Sarah Michelle Gellar vehicle. But that's okay. I stand by it. Helen and Julie break out the laptop back at Julie's house, and they find a news article about the death of a local girl named Susie, who is the fiance of their victim, David Egan. 2 years earlier, Susie and David were in a car accident near Dawson's Beach. And it's all coming together now. So they find David's obit. They decide to go speak with his mother and sister, who are his only surviving relatives. I think Helen is onto something as they're driving to the Egan house, when she says, "Shouldn't we have a plan?" Angela Lansbury always had a plan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I live for a good Murder, She Wrote reference. Arriving at the house, there's no answer at the door, so Helen's ready to leave, but Julie, not so much. So she goes around to the side of the house, she's looking in the window, and they're interrupted by Missy, David's sister, played by Anne Heche.
She's so perfect.
Kind of creepy, vulnerable, and sweet, but, like, weird.
Yeah.
I almost wish they would have, like, used her character more in some way. Like, make her even a little bit more, like, creepy. I don't know. Loved her character.
Yeah, she definitely could have been creepier, I think. They tell Missy that their car is broken down, and they ask to use her phone. As Helen goes to pretend to use the phone, she is startled by a black rain slicker hanging on a coat rack. But they're not super concerned, and Julie just starts asking Missy questions, and she's like, oh, your name sounds familiar. Did you have a brother or something? When they learn they went to the same high school. It reminds me of, like, those psychics where they're like, you have a brother,
right?
Uncle,
yeah.
Where am
nephew.
Where am I getting the letter D from? Something about the letter D.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Missy says, I had a brother, but he died last year. Things haven't been the same since. She's like, our mother's in a home because she, you know, she didn't do well when David died. And she then offers to make them a cup of tea while they wait for AAA to come. And Helen starts asking about David's friends because she's trying to suss out who may be terrorizing them. And Missy starts rhapsodizing about this one guy, Billy Blue. What a dumb name, Billy Blue. They had a little bit of a thing going on, she says, but it didn't last for too long. So this is all too much for Julie. She's torn apart by guilt, so they get out of there pretty quickly. No one else really appears to be nearly as broken up as she is. In fact, Helen just repeats the party line. It was an accident. Suddenly, Missy appears at the window, and she is banging like on that window.
So it's so aggressive. Scary. So aggressive.
Yeah. And she's like, oh, you forgot your cigarettes. Also, why does she have an accent?
They
don't have accents.
There's an accent.
Yeah, I wondered that too.
I did not. It did not occur to me. But I was like, well, she lives in this Texas Chainsaw Massacre house. Like, maybe she's not from that.
Yes, that's what I called it later in my notes. 100%. There's this tense moment when Missy comments on the fact that they got their car running again. Yeah, damnedest thing, isn't it? So Helen has a new theory. She's like, David was so broken up by Susie's death that he was sitting in the road waiting for us to hit him. Like, whatever helps you sleep at night, Helen.
Yeah. No doubt.
Helen tries to have a heartfelt conversation with Julie about the state of their friendship, but it doesn't go too well, and she kind of heads inside the house. She doesn't kind of head inside the house. She heads inside the house. And she kind of breaks my heart because she's lost her boyfriend. She's lost her best friend. She's lost her ambition. Like, she moved back to this little town to Croker, North Carolina, after not succeeding in New York City. Like, it's so sad.
She's pretty broken.
Yeah.
She needs a friend, for sure.
And then she has to go and hand off her Croker crown to the next. Like, what? Depressing.
And her sister is an ass.
And her dad doesn't even pay attention to her. Like, he literally doesn't even glance at her when she walks in the house.
No.
In fact, he's so out of it that he doesn't even notice when the fisherman enters the house right through the front door. So we see him enter a room at the top of the stairs just before Helen comes around the corner and up the stairs herself. So she's getting ready for bed, and it's tense because we know that he's in the closet. We can hear him breathing, so we know that he is in there waiting to make his move. And she is looking at her crown from last year's pageant, thinking about her glory days, presumably. And someone reaches for her, grabbing her shoulder, but it's only Elsa. She's like, I need you to be at the store the next morning for inventory. But Helen's like, it's the 4th of July parade. I need to be part of it. As this exchange is happening, Helen just keeps brushing her golden blonde locks. And Elsa is like deriding her, calling her pathetic before she leaves.
Damn.
Just pathetic.
Elsa, also, who wants to do inventory on the 4th of July?
Yeah, and who decides that last minute?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's not a night before decision.
Yeah.
It was a planned event.
Also, why do so many horror movies have those type of closet doors that are like shutter closet doors? Like, that you can like open them like they're blinds? Like, why do they have those in every horror movie?
Jamie Lee made them famous.
Yes.
No, it's an expectation. So Helen goes to sleep, and I don't know about you ladies, but I didn't expect her the first time I watched it to last the night.
Me neither.
But instead, she wakes up in the morning. She looks very well rested, but oddly with her tiara on top of her head. And she soon discovers, before she even gets out of bed, that her hair has been chopped off in her sleep. And someone has written "soon" on her mirror in lipstick. So how did she sleep through that?
That's what I said. Like, did somehow the fisherman, like, roofie her first so she didn't wake up? Like, I would definitely wake up if someone was chopping at my hair.
Right? And, like, you have to lift her head to get the back of her head.
Mm-hmm.
All excellent points. She was drinking a well-placed Diet Coke.
So. Oh, my God. Just that little, the crisp little snap of the tab.
Maybe slip something in there.
But wasn't she doing that when he was coming in the house?
But she only had, like, one sip out of it. So maybe it was up in the room later.
And she also has a cute little haircut a few short hours later.
How right?
So good.
Like, her hair, there is no way, because it was like, there's pieces that were chopped almost at the root. It would not look that good.
It's true. Julie gets the call that there has been a hair massacre, aww, and she jumps into the car to be by her friend's
finally
side.
Finally. It just takes Helen being attacked to have a friend in her life.
Yeah.
I loved, though, like, when she answers the phone, it's just like, what does she say? It's, like, so short, like,
what?
Oh, my God, what? And then she, like, immediately hangs up and is just, like, running to her car.
Yeah, we were like, what did she say? She's like, yeah. Oh, my God, I have! I want to know
how. I also think her what she says is so extreme. Like, the reaction is, like, over the top. It's like, she's like, somebody just killed 5 of your friends. Like, no.
Oh my God, what?
So as she's driving, she hears something scratching in her trunk, and she pulls over and stares nervously at it before opening it to find a trunk filled with crabs and Max's corpse.
This was the worst, the scuttling.
Yes.
That's why he needed those crabs, though.
So she is wigging out. She slams the trunk shut before running to Helen's house. Which, how far does Helen live from where she is? Because, like, she gets there pretty fast.
Yeah. I don't know. She's got that runner's gene, though. We saw that. She can run pretty fast.
And we know she's got good lungs. Like, she can take a lot of air in those lungs, so that's good. So she brings Barry and Helen back to the car. It is perfectly clean. There's no body. There's no crabs. There's no lingering seafood smell.
Yeah, what the hell? Like, not even a drop of water from these wet-ass crabs and dead body.
Exactly.
Do you think that she actually saw that and it was actually in there? Or was it her having, like, a psychotic break? But then again, I guess she didn't know that Max was dead otherwise.
Yeah,
so.
Like, I wish yeah. that was the case because that would make more sense. But... this killer.
Well, and then Crystal was upset that there was not even, like, a tarp in there. Like, how did
yeah.
it... otherwise, you could just, you know, grab the tarp, no big deal. But,
and
like, how does,
like,
it look...
at least a two-man job to wrangle all those crabs. Mm. How did he do it in the time that it took for her to run in, Sarah Michelle Gellar to put that hat on, and come back out?
It's true. It's very true. And, like... I don't know. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense. So, speaking of the hat, I feel like this is the perfect time to talk about the fashion in this movie.
Oh.
Because we have that black hat, which I had a similar Burgundy style hat. And I think I wore it on one of my first dates with Jer. And he later told me that was almost a deal breaker.
Oh my God.
Was it crushed velvet? The people want to know.
Mm-hmm. Of course. No, it was corduroy.
Oh, that is a surprise. I did not see that coming.
Burgundy corduroy Huggy Bear hat. Oh my gosh. Huggy Bear.
Better than the Paddington Bear hat.
That is true.
But Jennifer Love... Oh, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, she's got her periwinkle blue cropped tank top on. Ryan Phillippe just wearing a tight white undershirt because, of course, his jacket was stolen. And we have Jennifer Love Hewitt wearing her matching short sleeve sweater over her cropped tank top and then brown pants.
Oh, my. And let's not forget Julie's blossom hat earlier in the movie.
Yes.
The blossom hat, which is the female equivalent or the more feminine equivalent of the fisherman hat.
Yes, it is. Yikes.
So who would win in a fashion off? The cast of The Faculty or the cast of I Know What You Did Last Summer?
Ooh.
The Faculty.
Yeah, The Faculty did have big name fashion behind them.
Fashion.
Now I'm just picturing like Ryan Phillippe and Elijah Wood doing like a like model off.
Oh, God. Like in
Zoolander. That would be amazing.
Yeah. It is now time for the most quotable line in the movie as Julie realizes that the killer is fucking with them and she screams, "What are you waiting for, huh? What are you waiting for?"
While arms spinning in a circle.
I'm just spinning in a circle. Oh, God. It's so good. So apparently this scene was not in the original script.
Oh.
So there was a contest. The person that won got to come on and create a moment for the movie. And that person was a young child.
What?
In an interview with US Weekly in 2018, she said, he's like, "I want her to stand in the street and turn around and just scream, 'What are you waiting for, huh?'" Love Hewitt said, "I was literally like, are you kidding me right now? This is what I'm going to do? Okay. This was a great idea."
It became so iconic, like,
yeah.
Poor Crystal. So I watched Not Another Teen Movie a lot when it first came out for some silly reason, and I recently decided I was going to rewatch it. So when things were going on in this movie, I'm just like, oh my God, Not Another Teen Movie parodied this. Oh my God. So that's all I could think of in that scene was Not Another Teen Movie. Like, so dumb.
So they head back to Julie's house where they see Ray kind of prowling around. So Ray is Barry's number one suspect, even after he's like, "I got a letter too." He's like, "Well, that's balanced."
Oh my God. Also, how come Ray is getting off so light? He's the one that was driving the car.
That's a very good point. So Ray's motivation, he's jealous of the other three, Barry says. And Julie's like, no, it's not Ray. It's this Billy Blue guy. That gets a bit of a reaction from Ray before they continue on saying that David Egan would have been in the same class as Elsa, Helen's sister. So sure enough, there he is in Elsa's yearbook. The new plan, let's bring the yearbook to Missy. Maybe Billy lied about his name. She can pick him out of what Ray calls high school mugshots.
That poor sister. Like, can you imagine just going to somebody's house and just like interrogating them on their like brother that passed away in a really traumatic way? Like, oh boy.
I know. That's why, like, these teens are callous. They are so callous.
Right? In
every interaction they have.
Who has that confidence at that age to just be like, yeah, this is a great idea. Let's just go to their house and start asking questions.
So Barry and Helen are going to attend the parade. Julie will take the yearbook to Missy's. Ray tries to talk them out of it, and he's instead like, let's just get her to town. Let's go. But Julie's like, I tried that. It didn't work. It's time for us to face this. So the parade is underway. It is everything that I want it to be. Sarah Michelle Gellar sitting at a clamshell with her seashell crown on.
So ridiculous.
Incredible.
But why, like, why is Barry on the float with her?
That's
like,
my very next note.
Like, what does he have to do with anything on this parade?
He's just sitting there sullenly watching the crowd. It's so good. He's got like his scratched up face.
Yeah,
exactly. So Helen spots the fisherman and points him out to Barry, who ends up tackling an old man.
Oh, this poor old man.
With no remorse. Like, he doesn't even say like, "Oh my God, I'm so sorry." Just like, what does he even say? I don't even remember. Like, damn it. This poor guy is just like so traumatized.
Now we do see quite a few people wearing those slickers and hats in the crowd, which is weird because it looks like a hot day in July.
Right? Like, you're not fishing right now, so why are
they all
not
on their lunch break from the like driving to watch the parade and don't have time to take your slicker off?
Oh man, imagine sweating in one of those and trying to like take them off. It'd be like that Friends scene with,
like, with the leather pants.
Yeah, with the leather pants.
I wear hip waders to go like quadding, and if it's hot out, like, you sweat. Like, it's wearing plastic. It's awful.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Crystal, I need to see a picture of you in hip waders.
Oh, I'll send you one.
Julie shows up at Missy's house, but once again doesn't get an answer when she knocks on the door. So she starts to walk around, and there are some definite vibes going on with animal skins and skulls hanging on the fence. As Crystal said earlier, very Texas Chainsaw Massacre vibes.
Missy's really taking care of things out there. She's on her own. She's living off the land.
That house is huge also.
But she's very self-sufficient. Like she, like you said, she's living off the land. And she actually approaches Julie from behind with a knife drawn. But then she's like, oh, what are you doing here? She then continues gutting her fish, which is what she was doing.
Well, and I'm surprised that she asked what she's doing there, because she told them to come back because she was lonely earlier on.
What are you doing here? I came for the tea.
Yeah.
Julie tells her that David's death wasn't an accident, and Missy's like, I know, he killed himself. He was distraught over Susie's death, the fact that the town blamed him, and so he left behind a note, and that note says, I will never forget last summer. Julie recognizes the handwriting and says, that note is a death threat. She reveals everything. She's like, I even saw the tattoo with Susie's name on his arm, and Missy's like, what tattoo? He doesn't have a tattoo. Before telling Julie to leave. So at this point, Julie realizes that they didn't kill David, that it was someone else.
Dun, dun, dun.
At the pageant, Barry has promised to protect Helen, and he watches from the balcony. Things are improving for the former couple, and I think if they had survived, they would have gotten back together. That's
yeah, there was anyways. This one moment where they're both sitting on the float, and they're smiling at each other, and she has a great new haircut. And she just deserved so much better. Poor Helen.
And he's wearing a cream-colored sweater that looks like maybe he got it at Randy River, to be honest.
We stan Randy River on this podcast.
Yes, we do.
How many
yes,
pockets did his cargo pants have?
Yeah.
One of the contestants badly sings Fame.
Oh, my God.
Which I was singing along with also badly.
Yes.
And the fisherman appears on the balcony, but Barry doesn't see him. He doesn't hear Helen cry out. And this scene is, this next little act is so good because, like, there's so much going on. Like, there's the loud music, there's the stage lights. So nobody else can really see what's going on. Helen just has, like, kind of the perfect view to see what's happening. And she runs off stage. She is screaming Barry's name, but no one else is, like, seeing what she's seeing. Barry is knocked down. He is hooked repeatedly. And a cop walks onto the scene, showing no urgency whatsoever.
Right? And then not only that, but, like, why did everybody in the audience, like, all these men just, like, crowd her?
Yeah.
And try to, like, stop her. And they're all wearing those stupid fish hats. Like.
Damn. Show your croaker queen a little more respect.
Exactly.
Maybe there's a cult in town, and, like, Ben Willis is, like, the leader of the cult.
Whoa. It honestly seemed like that with those fish hats.
Oh my God, remember that song? Fish hats, roly poly fish hats.
Can't say that I do but that.
Oh my gosh. The police officer actually brings her up to the balcony because, you know, that's safe. She's saying somebody's being attacked up there, and he's like, oh, come on up with me.
Let's go have a look.
And the pageant continues on below. There is nothing there. The cop is not impressed. That fisherman works fast.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, how does he get rid of all the blood so quickly?
The cult.
Yes. The cult's working with him.
Two-man job, at the very minimum.
If ever I continue to know what you did all those summers ago, that'll be the big reveal. And how is the only blood in the whole crime scene just a little drip on the post of the railing?
Yeah, and I'm actually even shocked that he missed that because he is meticulous.
Oh, so the cop decides to take Helen home, and to add insult to injury, her crown is taken away from her.
Right? And she's just sitting in the back of the cop car, like, oh, how degrading. Do they let you do that in a cop car if you're not a...
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Maybe I don't think anyone but a police officer is let. No, I don't know.
That makes sense. There's probably a lot of gadgets and, like,
yeah,
things.
Gadgets? Gadgets. So gadget police car.
All those wheels have springs on them. And...
He turns into a lowrider.
Yeah. Civilians can't turn this into a lowrider.
As he's driving her home, the cop mocks her, even asking if the fisherman used the hook to cut off all her hair. And she's like, no, he used scissors, asshole. God damn. Now, she is well aware that this sounds crazy, but he just dismisses it as an urban legend. And when Helen says to him, when she calls him a little shit stick Mayberry ass reject, you can't help but cheer. Yeah. But then he also should listen to her because she's like, don't take the alley, don't take the alley. And he takes the alley.
Oh my God.
Actually, she doesn't tell him not to take the alley, but he should just listen to her that this is really happening and not take the alley. But instead, he makes some kind of effort. He's like, I'll reach out to Barry's parents, just as he notices someone who seems to be having car trouble. She's like, no, it's him. It's him. And sure enough, this is the fisherman who gives him a good hook to the gut. Now, apparently, after Julie finds Max's body and the crabs in her trunk, a blue and white truck drives by.
Oh.
Later on, in this scene, that truck is the same blue and white truck.
Oh, I missed that.
So I guess that's how he got that out. He was following her, saw this happen, managed to swing back around when she ran to get Helen and Barry, and then remove the body and the crabs into his truck, and then managed to get away.
So did that trunk have a top thing? Because can you imagine just driving around with someone's head in the back of your truck with a bunch of crabs for everybody to see?
That's where the tarp was. The tarp was in his truck.
Ah, yes.
There you go, Crystal. There's your tarp.
Yeah.
I also feel like the opportunity to use the song Hooked on a Feeling was really lost here.
Oh my God, that would have been amazing. Oh, wow.
Helen manages to break the window in the back seat, which I also think would be very difficult in a cop car.
Mm-hmm.
Climbing out and running towards her family's store. She sees Elsa inside. She's banging on the door. She's like, let me in, as the fisherman approaches. Meanwhile, Julie is searching for more information about Susie's death and sees that she has been survived by her father, Ben, a local fisherman. How convenient. Just in time, Elsa lets Helen in, saying, you could have come around the other entrance. It's open. Well, thanks, Elsa, for letting the killer know that there's another entrance that isn't locked.
Oh, God, you suck, Elsa.
I'm actually surprised that she even let Helen in at all, to be honest.
Yeah, if you're not here for inventory, you may as well keep walking.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really hold it against Elsa, though, because she suffers the consequences when she goes to lock up that entrance. The killer has gotten in, he appears behind her, and she gets violently slashed, blood splashing against the glass door. And there's a pretty cool shot of the reflection of the fisherman in her glasses.
Yeah.
You see him, slashing away at her. And when he drags her body as it hangs off the hook, that is brutal.
But also, I don't know, when I rewatched it, I was like, this body doesn't look realistic. I don't know. But yeah, that is brutal. I just can't even imagine.
That's not a real person.
Yeah.
one of those mannequins.
Yeah.
Helen hears something downstairs. She heads back down and she is calling for her sister. Now, I've worked a lot of retail jobs in my life, and I have never seen mannequins covered in plastic sheeting.
Me neither. I don't know. That right there would freak me out of my own store. That would just freak me out. Yeah, mannequins in general are kind of creepy, so.
I mean, I guess it's a dust repellent, but I've never seen anywhere so dusty that they need to cover every night.
And you should changing up the mannequins, what they're wearing every so often. So at that point, you would probably just dust them.
Yeah.
However, it's effective because one of those mannequins is not like the others, and it is the fisherman. And he lunges out for Helen from under his plastic sheeting.
One of the 50 mannequins. There are so goddamn many.
There are a lot for a relatively small store. Helen runs. She finds her sister's body in the bathroom before she continues her escape. And I think this is my favorite scene in the whole movie because Helen really tries to use her wits to try to escape. She uses that it's a service elevator to get up to the second floor. Unfortunately, she falls from a second floor window, but that does allow her to get out and she runs towards the 4th of July crowds.
She hardly seemed hurt at that point.
Yeah, she was just kind of limping a little bit.
Maybe yeah.
It's the adrenaline.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, her efforts are in vain, and the killer basically is muted by the sounds of the marching band, the crowds, the fireworks, everything's going on, so nobody hears as he kills her.
Because the parade is still going on hours later.
Where did our previous queen come from? Like, I mean, go to. Like, are they not concerned on where she went to at all?
That's a good point. Well, I guess nobody they thought cares. She was going back with the police officer. So she's all right. It's so heartbreaking because she's like just a few feet from safety and yet she is killed in the alleyway.
Yeah, that sucked. Oh, what a heartbreaker.
Rest in peace, Helen Shivers. Julie makes her way to Ray's boat where she shares her discovery. It wasn't David Egan in the road. It was Ben Willis. And Ben Willis killed David Egan. A little convoluted, but okay.
Yeah. Not the easiest plot to follow.
No, it's really not. But what if Ben didn't die? What if he's still out there?
He didn't die. He was alive when you dumped him in the water.
Ray invites her on his boat, but then she sees the name of his boat, Billy Blue. Dun, dun, dun.
If you thought it was a dumb name for a person, it's an even dumber name for a boat.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's enough to convince her that Ray is the fisherman, and she runs. Once again, he runs after her and he gets like taken out as some random guy in the docks basically just clotheslines him. Mm-hmm. Which, thank goodness, a good Samaritan.
Yes. Like, you would think after having like a killer after you that you wouldn't just trust some like rando on a dock.
The kindness of strangers.
Exactly. But she does. She listens to him when he's like, get on my boat, because he just saved her. Except not so much. She goes in the cabin of the boat and she sees his personal belongings. She sees his hat. She sees pictures of her and her friends. He's clearly been stalking them. And he also has a shrine to his daughter on the wall.
She spends way too much time looking at that stuff. Like, as soon as I would see one picture, I would get out. But she's like standing there, like examining it. I'm like, no.
She's like, oh, I remember that day.
Yeah. That's a good memory.
We're going to have a photo lab guy not to warn them. Like, just so you know.
He comes in and tells her that kids like her should be out having fun. You know, drinking, partying, running people over, getting away with murder. You know, the usual 4th of July festivities. She finally realizes that this is Ben Willis and she gets away from him before realizing that the boat has been moving away from the dock this whole time. Ben Willis is played by an actor called Muse Watson, and I just wanted to share a quote because I just really liked what he said about his character and the way he kind of took on his movements. He says, the way I work is I offer to loan my body to the character. So it's pretty intense. Well, I guess it's been long enough that I can talk about this. I was scared to death that if I loaned this guy my body, I wouldn't get it back. It was really scary, and I needed the credit. I needed the money. It was a career move, and as an actor, I knew playing a horror actor could put you down in other areas of Hollywood, which I wanted like hell. Nobody thinks that any of these horror actors act. I don't know why, but for me, I just put so much study into every move I made. When you see that fast walk in I Know What You Did Last Summer, I practiced that. I practiced the hook. I worked my tail off on this character. Being scared that I wouldn't get my body back, one night I was conjuring the character and I got the idea that he was laughing at me. I immediately said, what are you laughing at? And he said, you're trying to work yourself up to the point where you can kill somebody. I'm a psychotic. It's like drinking a cup of coffee to me. It ain't nothing. And I made one of the best acting decisions I ever made in my life then. Instead of me becoming a psycho, why didn't I just walk out there and do nothing? Because I'd be reflecting this guy's feelings, that killing somebody didn't mean nothing. So I'd walk on the set, I'd perform this guy, and the look on my face was like having a cup of coffee.
Oh my God. That was probably frightening for the rest of the cast.
Yeah, imagine having lunch next to that guy.
Imagine just like walking by and he's like by his trailer practicing his like hook moves. That would be frightening.
The whole idea is like I'm offering my body to this character.
Yeah.
That's bonkers. Very strange thing to say.
Being possessed is not ideal. I don't know why he would want to do that.
No. It's not ideal. That is an understatement. She finds a flare gun, but it is unfortunately knocked out of her hand when Ben steps on the gas, except that it's a gas. It's a boat. So whatever the nautical equivalent is. I don't drive. I don't sail boats. I don't know. he pulls on the throttle.
But I'm like, it's a big lumbering boat. Like, it wouldn't have that much kick, would it? I also don't know boats.
I know nothing.
So this final sequence is actually shot on a real waterbound vessel on the Cape Fear River, which was very difficult for both actors and crew. The filmmakers say they nearly lost the boat while attempting to dock it because the waters were so volatile. So they had to basically leave and shoot other footage until the following day. So Julie climbs into a hatch that leads into the belly of the boat. Ray has stolen a little motorboat in the meantime and has managed to board Ben's vessel. So Ray and Ben have this little showdown on deck. Ben is into it. He's got a little grin on his face, but Ray is holding his own. Or he is, until Julie distracts him, shouting his name, which allows Ben to hit him, and he's knocked right into the water. He does manage to get a hold of some nets, dragging through the water, though, so don't count him out yet. Ben, coming after Julie, she ends up in some kind of ice box storage, which obviously is where he keeps the fish that he catches. So the ice inside the storage of the boat was made of gelatin so that she could actually move around.
Thank you. I was saying to Crystal, this can't be ice, that's like real ice.
So weird. Yeah.
So Ray has climbed back onto the boat, which is a good thing he's agile, because if that were me, I would have died.
I was thinking that too. Yeah. I was like, imagine trying. I would drown for sure.
I don't think I would even make it up the nets, to be honest.
I have no upper body strength, and I can't swim anyway, so I would that'd be the end of me.
But also, he's very young, so like maybe when we were 19, 20, we would be able to climb up that. You never know.
Doubt it.
That's now, true.
I'm old and I could never, but.
I might have been able to at that age. You're right. That's a good point. That's a good point. I probably still wouldn't have been, but I had a better chance then than I do now.
Yeah.
Back on shore, and I would finally be climbing up.
Julie is crawling around in the ice, and she finds the bodies of her friends, which makes sense because it's July. It's a small boat. You don't want that smell permeating your nautical equipment. Ben is oblivious to Ray's reappearance on the boat, and he opens one of the hatches to reveal Julie. At this point, Jennifer Love Hewitt emits one of her should-be award-winning screams. Mm-hmm. So Ray uses the opportunity to send a hook flying at Ben's face, which knocks him out, but only for a few seconds before he pops back up again, knocking Ray down, telling Julie, the next time you leave a man for dead, make sure he's really dead. Words to live by. Mm-hmm. And this is going to these next notes are going to show, again, my lack of understanding of how boats work. So just as he's about to slash her, his wrist gets caught in some rigging, and Ray, being the quick thinker that he is, he manages to do something that causes those ropes to retract, pulls Ben into the air, and it cuts off his hand before he plummets into the ocean.
I totally didn't remember this ending on how this happened, so I was surprised.
It is time for a romantic embrace before we head back to the dock where the police are on site. So they just dismiss this past year of torment and anguish. They're like, it was nothing. It was for nothing. We didn't kill anyone. So Ray admits that he was consumed by guilt and needed to know who he was, which is why he met Missy under the name Billy Blue. Ray's clearly still in love with her. It appears that the feeling is mutual. But the police have to come over. They have some questions to ask, I'm sure. And they do, but the sheriff seems appeased. Like, he's just going to drop the whole thing when they're like, no, we don't know why Ben Willis would want us dead, officer.
Yeah.
Bang up policing. So how convenient, though, they don't find the body, but the sheriff isn't too concerned. He's like, it'll turn up. Don't worry about it. It's fine. It's not like this is a horror movie and it's going to come back and haunt you later on. Flash forward 1 year later, we're back on campus with our good friend Julie, who is looking so much better and is also doing so much better. In fact, she made the dean's list. The previous year, she was on the verge of dropping out. She's back together with Ray and she's excited because they're going to be reunited in a few weeks in New York. And as she turns on the shower, someone tells her that she has mail. Why would they bring it to the showers?
Why would you just
leave it in her dorm room?
That's so weird. Like, she's in the bathroom. Like, leave her alone.
She wraps up her phone call with Ray before seeing the letter in the locker room. And that handwriting looks awfully familiar. Psych! It's an invitation to a sorority pool party. I don't think I've said psych in forever. she heads back into the showers, which are absolutely filled with steam. Like, she must have that water absolutely boiling. And on one of the glass shower doors is written, "I still know." And she looks around. She's trying to assess where the danger is coming from. And suddenly we hear kind of a little chime, like a hook hitting metal. And she turns to look at the writing on the wall, or the writing on the door once more, before the fisherman breaks through the glass, lunging at her. And that's the movie.
Love it.
Yeah. So it originally had a different ending, where Julie is actually chatting with Ray online. She gets a pool party invitation, and then another person starts to chat with her, typing in, "I still know." And Ooh. Then the killer jumps out of there.
Oh.
So what makes this a great movie?
Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Why do we watch I Know What You Did Last Summer? Did you say Sarah Michelle Gellar?
Yes.
100%.
Yeah, I agree. Her character was the one that I liked the best for sure. And I think the scene I like the most is at the pageant when Barry gets killed. That one was kind of freaky when I first watched it.
Crystal, what about you? What do you love about this movie?
Yeah, Sarah Michelle Gellar. She's like the best part of the whole movie. She deserved, I'll say it again, deserved so much better. I feel like that chase scene in Shivers is like one of the all-time best chase scenes in horror movies. I mean, everybody loves Buffy. She's the best. So,
that's true.
Yeah, I think she makes it for me. Like, I don't really care much about any of the other characters. It's a fun watch, but it's not a go-to. But yeah, it's definitely fun, and I'm glad I got a chance to rewatch it because it had been a very long time.
It's not, like you said, it's not something, well, I, like I said, avoided it for 24 years. But it's not something that like is going to be part of my, you know, yearly playlist. Mm-hmm. Will I watch it if I'm in the mood for some great screaming? Sure, because I think Jennifer Love Hewitt does a great job screaming. She is iconic in that scene in the street where she's like, "What are you waiting for, huh?" Like, you know, like I knew that before I saw the movie.
Right.
And I like the, I mean, I don't think this movie's trying to say anything too deep to, like, let's be honest. But I like this idea that, you know, it's like a morality tale. They do something, they hide it, and they suffer the consequences. But it's really not a morality tale because when you think about it at the end, they're like, "Oh, well, we didn't really do anything wrong." No, bitch, you still did something wrong.
Yeah. You kind of drew, well, I mean, he was already obviously crazy with, like, because of his daughter, but, like, you didn't help his situation at all. And then, yeah, you don't, like, a year later, you don't care that your friends are dead or anything. You're just, like, perfectly normal and mentally healthy. Like, did you learn nothing?
Exactly. You still thought that you disposed of a dead body without telling anyone, that you killed someone. So, like, the intent matters very much here.
Yeah, you had every opportunity to save this fully alive man, and you killed him 3 times, I guess?
Did nobody know how to check a pulse properly then? Right? Like,
oh my god.
Apparently not. See, now, if only he had an Apple Watch. And then they could just be like, "He'll check his heart rate. He's okay. It's okay."
Our times have changed.
Mm-hmm. So have you watched the sequels or the show?
I watched the show recently. I started watching the sequel, but I haven't had a chance to finish it.
Yeah, I haven't watched the show. I know that I've watched the sequel in the past, but honestly, I don't really remember anything about it.
Again, Jennifer Love Hewitt is outshined by her... Outshone by her co-star, Brandy, who is way better than she is.
Oh, yeah.
I did not remember that at all.
And then we have Rastafarian Jack Black, who I love Jack Black, but this is not his movie.
Oh, no. Now I have to watch it.
Yeah, I don't remember that at all.
Please do. Please do. Did you like the show, Crystal?
It was okay. It was fun. It was worth a watch. Again, not the best story we've ever seen, but
it's there.
Yeah, it's fine.
It's there. So the soundtrack, let's talk just quickly about the soundtrack. I feel like the 90s, you either had a really great soundtrack or you had a really terrible soundtrack, and this was the latter.
Yes.
It was not a good soundtrack.
It just made me think of Dawson's Creek soundtrack, though, a lot.
I don't remember. What's on Dawson's Creek soundtrack?
I don't know. Something that sounds like this one.
Oh, dear.
I don't know.
Awesome. Okay, so body count, we had 6. So we had David, Max, Barry, the police officer, Elsa, and Helen. And then, of course, obviously, well, we think that Ben Willis is dead, but we're not 100% positive, but we don't count him because he wasn't a victim. He was the evil killer. I don't know why I had to say it like that.
Evil killer.
You know, like it's the fruits of the devil.
All right, so how many scaredy cat screams, 1 through 5, would you give this? 5 being a total Jennifer Loves Hewitt scream.
I was trying to be positive, and it is a really fun movie, so I will give it a 4. I don't know. I feel like that's probably too high. Maybe a 3.5.
I would say 3, because I think when I first watched it, there was some scenes that scared me. Nice. Plus, it's fun to watch.
Yeah.
It is a very fun to watch movie. It is very indicative of like that teen horror period in the 90s, I think. So, I mean, it's no Urban Legend. It's no Valentine.
I'm going to go home and watch Urban Legend.
It's no Final Destination. I think Final Destination. Is that even 90s? I don't think it was 90s.
Oh, yeah. It had to be.
Okay, so thank you for coming on to talk about I Know What You Did Last Summer, Jennifer Love Hewitt's Screams, and Sarah Michelle Gellar's Tiara/Crown. Is it a tiara or is it a crown?
I think it's a crown. It's such a gaudy crown.
Shells. A little seahorse and shells. Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. So tell us where we can find you and tell us a little bit more about your podcast and where folks can listen to it.
You can find The Real Housewives of Saskatoon almost anywhere that you listen to your favorite podcasts. We're on Apple, Spotify. Gosh, I don't know all those other ones that I can't think of right now. But come check us out if you like Real Housewives and hot piping celeb tea.
Well, tell us about your personal social media as well, if you'd like.
Sure. You can follow me on Twitter if you want. That's kind of fun. I like Twitter. It's just Chris Olson on Twitter if you want to come and say hi.
Yeah, and I'm on Instagram just under Mick Stays. I don't know. I don't post anything really that interesting, so it's okay if you don't want to follow me, but...
So self-deprecating.
I don't know. Yeah, but I will say Crystal kind of takes care of the Real Housewives Insta, and her memes are amazing, so you should probably follow it.
Yeah,
for
we
that.
Have fun. Come on over, say hi.
And I mean, if people are like, how do the worlds of horror and Real Housewives mix? I mean, hello, Halloween.
Yes.
Yeah,
the one and only Kyle Richards, Queen mm-hmm. of Beverly Hills.
Awesome. Well, thank you for joining us today. You can catch us on Twitter at CatScaredy and on Instagram at ScaredyCats of the podcast. Subscribe wherever you find podcasts and don't forget to let us know what you think by leaving us a review. Until next time, stay scared.